Seeing the crowds, Jesus went up onto the mountain, and when he was seated, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak. This is what he taught them. How blessed are the poor in spirit. The kingdom of heaven is theirs. Blessed are the gentle. They shall have the earth for their inheritance. Blessed are those who mourn. They shall be comforted. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for uprightness. They shall have their fill. Blessed are the merciful. They shall have mercy shown them. Blessed are the pure in heart. They shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers. They shall be recognized as children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted in the cause of uprightness. The kingdom of heaven is theirs. Blessed are you when people abuse you and persecute you and speak all kinds of calumny against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven. This is how they persecuted the prophets before you. Matthew gives us these Beatitudes as Jesus' first sermon. Certainly, they are the core of his teaching, the way he's calling us to live. But we could study them for years and always learn something new from them. Today, I'd like to ask whether we are responding to Jesus' words in these Beatitudes in the ways we deal with those who commit crime, the offenders in our neighborhoods. Jesus calls, challenges us to walk in a way that's gentle, merciful, as peacemakers, the way of non-violence. But do we? Recently in Christchurch, New Zealand, a little boy of 4 was standing with his mother and brothers at the traffic lights. Suddenly a car driven by a teenage driver skidded into them, killing him and injuring his brother. His grieving mother attended the courtroom trial of the young driver. She tried to understand him, saw how it was truly accidental that he had killed her child. She wondered what would be done to him. She saw that he had not been driving recklessly, although the modifications he'd done on his car did make it less safe. She saw that he too was stricken by grief at what he'd done, and at the accident scene had tried to help revive her son. She saw the young driver as a human person like herself, and she asked that he not be sent to prison. The judge too was inclined not to send him to jail and sentenced him instead to community service, to serve the community in some useful ways. But several newspaper columnists condemned the mother for this. They said that the young man should suffer proper punishment for what he'd done by going to prison, and that this would deter other young drivers from recklessly driving or making dangerous alterations to their cars. I don't know whether these newspaper columnists or the readers who chimed in to agree with them are Christian, but if they claim to be, then I ask, how could they square their reactions with the words of Jesus, blessed are the gentle, blessed are the peacemakers, the merciful, those who hunger and thirst for justice? These words throw down a huge challenge to the justice system and the prison system in New Zealand, Australia, the United States, Britain, or in fact anywhere. In our massive prison systems, which we have inherited and which we continue to expand, we lock up people to punish them, as we say, for doing wrong. Do we really think through what we're doing? In the USA, an astonishing 2.2 million people are locked up in prisons. Here in New Zealand, we have the next highest rate of imprisoning in the Western world. Why do we lock up serious offenders? 4 reasons are given: to keep society safe, to punish the offenders, to correct or reform them, and to deter others from committing similar crimes. The first reason? Yes, a few offenders do need to be confined, for they would do more harm if they were left free. But we urgently need to ask, how is it that many other countries in the world lock up less than half of as many prisoners as we do, and they still have less violence in their society? Second reason, punishment. As Christians, how can we say that it's good to cause pain to someone just because they've caused pain to someone else? This is simply vengeance, an eye for an eye, that Jesus explicitly forbade. But I say to you, love your enemies, he said, Do good to those who harm you. Did Jesus say, blessed are the vengeful? Certainly not. Here we read the exact opposite. Blessed are the merciful, the gentle. How does he ask us to love those who harm us? This touches on the third reason for prisons. Real love, some call it tough love, would do everything possible to help prisoners to reform, to change their lives, whether by keeping them in prison for a time or by alternative penalties. But even though New Zealand calls its prison department, quote, correctional services, unquote, this is hardly honest. Sadly, our government doesn't try to correct. It's cutting back most of the programs that once helped prisoners. Earlier, they could learn a trade in prison, mechanics, carpentry or gardening, or at least learn to read and write, which many had never learned to do. But now, funding for such programs has been reduced or cut off, and they're given longer sentences and waste large slabs of their lives locked up. When we send a man or woman to our prisons, they will suffer degradation and humiliation. Is this likely to rebuild their broken character? Most of the persons who commit crime have already been seriously damaged in their childhood or by poverty. Certainly, almost all serious sexual offenders have been also sexually abused when they were young, so degrading them further is not going to help them become better persons. Prisoners often suffer violence in prison. Bullying is commonplace. Many will be injured, beaten, possibly raped by other prisoners. Inevitably, some of their guards will abuse the power they have over prisoners. There is even torture. Do we consider this when we send people to jail? Now, we're putting some prisons into the hands of private companies, whose main reason for existing is to make profit for their shareholders. This means that the people who run the company and invest in it want more people to go to jail, for this means bigger profits. Isn't there something mad, even obscene, about this? What about the fourth reason for imprisoning? Deterrence. Do prison sentences deter others from crime? It seems not. Again and again, studies have shown that prison, even the terrible death penalty, which most countries abandoned long ago, don't deter others from committing the same crimes. Jesus' words throw a serious challenge to us ordinary Christians. Be gentle. Be compassionate. Be merciful as God is. Forgive those who harm you. Forgive your enemies. He calls us to deal with offenders strongly, but constructively, moved by genuine love for them. Can we Christians face the truth that today our prisons are places where we send people mainly to be punished and from which they come out worse than before? That our prisons are actually a sort of machine that is destroying our societies? If we want to call ourselves disciples of Jesus, surely we must ask, are we obeying his teachings when we lock people up? Every citizen is responsible for this, every taxpayer, everyone who has a right to vote. The Beatitudes are Jesus' recipe for bringing about God's kingdom, the reign of God among us, now on our way to eternity. That mother in Christchurch, whose little boy was killed, when she forgave the driver who killed him and asked that he not be sent to jail, showed that she knew more, a lot more, about the Beatitudes than the columnists who criticized her. What about us? What do our words and actions tell the world when we deal with the offenders in our society?